members, officials from labor department, officials, and economic development. Good morning. We are here to listen to the labor department, culture, and fisheries department, and also the industry, the wool growers of South Africa. We have an apology from Home Affairs, which is quite unfortunate. The aim of this session, I must start by apologizing that our program kept on changing from time to time, informed by the urgency of the matter that we are dealing with now. We thought that it would be important that we deal with this matter and with the urgency that it deserves. The industry has since been knocking on a number of doors on the matter, a matter that is so important to our own economy, which would probably be necessary that we convene as urgently as is possible, hence today. We do have, before we start our session and listening to presentations, we do have a few apologies. As I said, my name is Lulu Johnson. I'm chairperson of this committee on agriculture, forestry and fisheries, Mr. Ngosi. We have apologies from Labour Committee. The chair, Mr. Ntshabelo, he has since gone to a meeting of ILO. We thought we would have this session next week when he would be back as well. But we're pressed with our own times, because next week we're busy with another program on an oversight visit in Northwest. Minister is unfortunately not available. She has since tendered her apologies for Minister Tina Kumar Peterson. And also, we have an apology from Mrs. Dane, one of our members in the committee. And also, Mrs. Dwala, she has to attend to another committee responsibility. She's part of the Commonwealth structure of parliamentarians. We do have a few members of other committees who are present with us today. From Labour Committee. Mr. Masfer Mule, Mr. Nyakemba, Honorable Mudau, and Honorable Verstappen. They have joined us. The department has also apologized that they couldn't send any of their DG or Mr. Ndombela. Mr. Ramasoli, who is acting DG, is here with us. I'm not sure who is here from Labour. I'm sure they will be able to introduce themselves. But as I said, the matters are straightforward. Labour Department also hasn't been able to prepare a PowerPoint presentation. However, they certainly will talk to the regulations and of course also with the principal act that informs know for a fact that the Department of Labor was too struggling with its regulation. Whilst the Labor Department is still getting itself prepared, perhaps it would be prudent on ourselves that we have the Culture, Forest and Fisheries Department. The department is ready, I'm sure the floor is. The department. The Department of Economic Development is also with us. People could also just get a sense of those coming from the Department of Agriculture. Just by way of being introduced by whoever else will be presenting. From Labour, who is here? Also, we are informed that Home Affairs members are here. Mr. McIntosh, I saw him there somewhere. Yeah. And then Mr. Kam? Kwam? Where is he? Oh, there you are, behind the traditional leader here. So just to get a sense of those from Labour Department, present here. How many? Two. If you could just quickly introduce yourselves.
From Department of Labor Head Office, from a branch called Public Employment Services. I'm responsible for labor migration.
Dixon Corner from Department of Labor Parliamentary Labor Office.
Duma Nkosi from Planning and Coordination.
Nobody is here from Home Affairs and from Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. You, as you take the platform, might as well take the whole process. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable members that are here today, the industry and colleagues. I'm Mogisa Ramaswamy from the Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries. With me, I've got Mr. Joe Kobokwe, who's the Chief Director within Sectoral Colleges, and I've got Mr. Keith Ramsey, who is the Acting Director within the Directorate in our production. I'll be taking you through a presentation where we have come up with probable actions in terms of the predicament that currently is facing the National Wool Growers Association. Allow me to take you through the outline of the presentation, Chairperson. So we will look at a brief overview on the DAS and the NWGA, which is the National Wool Growers Association Partnership. We will look at what we would perceive to be the NWGA wool program, the key interventions, proposals that we are coming with, the choices that we think would resolve the situation, and the institutional arrangements that go together with that proposal that will be taken today. The partnership between the DAF and the NWGA stems from the contribution that this department is having towards two of the 12 outcomes that government has, and that is Outcome 7 and Outcome 10. Outcome 7 deals with a mission to have a vibrant, equitable, and sustainable rural communities and food security for all, while Outcome 10 deals with environmental assets, natural resources that are well protected and continually advanced. Members would be aware that contribution towards these outcomes also come towards food security and secondly towards job creation. And these outcomes also address the sector plan and critical areas that include improving global competitiveness and profitability, equitable access and participation, and ensuring sustainable resource management. To this effect, the DAF and the NWGA have signed a memorandum of understanding that seeks to, amongst others, upscale mentorship a program in the Eastern Cape and extend it to the Eastern Free State, KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, assist in developing wool sheep farmers to produce wool of good quality and quantity that would accord international standards, strengthen the capacity of developing wool sheep farmers through a linkage program that creates access to markets and thereby improve livelihoods, capacitate developing wool farmers to become entrepreneurs through skills, transfer and development initiatives, and lastly, facilitate the improvement of genetic material of wool sheep of developing farmers and inculcate sound natural resource management practices. Our interpretation of the current problem that the wool industry is facing is we recognize the immense importance of wool production to the South African economy as the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. We also recognize the commendable initiatives of ensuring small-scale farmers' participation in the wool market. I should say, Chairperson, that the wool industry is one of those that strives to ensure that there is equity in participation of people within the industry through the development of small-scale farmers, and we have had success stories in terms of the graduation through the SAM mentorship, master mentorship program that we are having in the industry. We also recognize the relevance of wool sharing to wool production and training in this field as very critical. We also recognize wool sharing as a sport and the performance of the South African Sharers' performance at the last international event in New Zealand, where we got first and second place respectively. There is also acute acknowledgement of the following, that there are shortages in the South African labor market for wool sharing. The root problem based on the submission from the NWG can be summed up as follows. That there is a threat of a fall in wool production due to a process or a regulation in decentralization of the issuance of corporate permits to farmer and regional level. This has got unintended consequences from the interpretation of the department, that it brings administrative burdens on the current systems. It will impact on immigration and labor movement. It will lead to job losses at national and regional level. and which might bring instability to countries that are getting assistance, like your Lesotho in this case, and might also lead to economic losses based on the contribution of wool to the GDP of this country. While recognizing the root problem, it must however be stressed from the department that wool production and wool sharing needs to happen within the confines and ambit of the South African immigration and labor law. And therefore, the dark view of the root problem is in observation and input and submission to the prescribed processes and procedures as outlined by the relevant department, that is the Department of Labor and the Department of Home Affairs in this case. We have looked at various options of the department, and four became very prominent to us, and we would like to submit those for evaluation and ultimate consideration. One, we are saying allow for the full implementation of the decentralized corporate payment system as one option. Two, implement a decentralized corporate payment system in a phased-in approach and subject such implementation to continuous evaluation over a period of time. Three, revert to the issuance of corporate payments to organize national operators like your current operators that are there as in the past. Or, fourthly, revert to the issuance of corporate payments to organized operators, but simultaneously look at evaluation of available options for a system that would be amenable to all parties involved without jeopardizing any legislative requirement. If we go through all the options that we have come up with, all of them have got advantages and disadvantages. But from a department's point of view, we looked at the advantages to say that what we need is one, is time in terms of looking at the issues without jeopardizing any economic activities within the country and looking at the current arrangements that we are having. And therefore, we would propose to this August House that our option in terms of the choice of intervention is the issuance of corporate permits to organize operators on a national basis, but simultaneously evaluate available options for a system that would be amenable to all parties involved without jeopardizing any legislative requirements, and that we have got to repeat. And therefore, we suggest that at this stage, we allow for a steering committee nominated by the DG, if not the DGs participating themselves at that, of Labour, Home Affairs, Agriculture, and the chairperson of the National Growers Association, that it be established to look at the available options, while at the same time going with the current system that we are having of issuing the permits on a national basis or for corporate permits for those who are organized operators at this stage. We have further said that in terms of operational institutional arrangements, we come up with a proposal to say, should this House agree to such arrangements, we would give these institutional arrangements to the House to say the Department of Labor would be leading the process in terms of discussions and lead the steering committee. Secondly, convene meetings of the steering committee. And thirdly, provide secretariat to the steering committee. The Department of Home Affairs would then provide immigration expertise to the committee. Thirdly, the Department of Agriculture would provide agricultural expertise to the steering committee. And fourthly, the National Wool Growers Association would represent the wool growers on the steering committee and fund the steering committee overhead costs. And by overhead costs, what we mean is that each and every participant within the process would be paying for their travel costs and other costs, except for the venue and other issues in terms of running the project itself. Chairperson, we submit that this is the view that we are having, that without jeopardizing, one, any legislation within this country, and two, any economic derivatives that can be accrued to our people in the Eastern Cape, in the Eastern Free State, in KwaZulu-Natal and Mpumalanga, that we come to a level where we take the middle road to implement corporate permits as they were implemented in the past, while at the same time exploring options on what we can do next with the leadership of the Department of Labor. We start with the Chairperson.
Thank you. What we will do, members, is to would be to receive all the presentations and then engage in discussion thereafter. I take that as accepted.
I'm sorry, I'm actually at a DTI meeting PC at the moment on the cooperatives bill. And I would like just to comment, if you don't mind, because I have to go back to that meeting with your permission.
You want to comment on this before you listen to everything else?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Won't that disadvantage you before you listen to what the Labour has to say? Let us just listen to the Labour.
Okay.
If you don't mind. Thank you. They always say wise man changes his mind. And perhaps whilst waiting for the Labour Department, you might as well, without opening a discussion, a comment.
No, sir, I don't want to open discussion. Thank you very much, sir. Could I just explain? I'm a farmer. I live in KwaZulu-Natal. I've had sheep. I've made use of shearing services. I'm also extremely aware, because I was president of KwaNalu, which is a transformed non-racial agricultural union, how important the wool industry is for small emerging farmers in the Eastern Cape and in Lesotho, because Lesotho has three exports, they say. One's green gold, one's white gold, and one's silver gold. Silver gold's the water. The green gold is what you may know as Mtunzwenkuku, Nsango, and the white gold is wool. So wool has been a critical part of South Africa's economy for 150 years. And we've always had to shear the sheep. I mean, it's not rocket science in Southern Africa to shear sheep. Now, we have previously operated under a system, and I accept our new labor regulations may require adjustments. But basically, farmers, including the small farmers of the Eastern Cape and Lesotho, have organized themselves. I mean, they're independent, competent people. And I all my concern is, Mr. Chairman, with respect, is that we do not try to reinvent the wheel. In other words, if it ain't broke, why try to fix it up? And I do accept that the Department of Labor may want to have an input now, because in the old days, people came across on permits organized by BKB, and we need something there. But all I'm urging us to do, Mr. Chairman, and that's my appeal to you and the committee, is not let's create a huge infrastructure to do something that's been actually working for more than a century. And that's my concern. Thank you.
Why did I have an impression or an idea that you were going to be covered by the industry? Thanks, Lip.
Thanks, Chairperson, for the opportunity. The Department of Labor's presentation is actually very short. That is even more shorter on strategic issues and policy, but more on the procedures. The service is termed, as you may read over there, acronym ICBLM, which stands for International
service, we are still based on the amended Act, Immigration Act number 19 of 2004, and the regulations thereto of 2005. While I may not necessarily go along quoting the two documents verbatim, the principles, policies drawn from there influence the procedures that we draw on to guide ourselves in recommending who may and may not come into the South African labor market to exercise economic activity from abroad. In these regulations, we do recognize that the country does become global, as contained in the very preamble of the statute that I have mentioned. Now, in globalization, what we're trying to make sure is that we block no ways to the economy accessing certain critical skills internationally, where we realize that the South African labor market does not abound in those. However, along with that, our policy is really two-pronged. The second prong is that of protectionism. Deliberately, through our department, we protect the vulnerable citizens of South Africa against unfair competition. For the scarce employment opportunities within the country by labor migrants and by our understanding, which would like that to be the understanding of all interested and involved, is that even if a South African citizen has the skills equal to those of a foreigner, and a foreigner gets preferred over a South African citizen, that's interpreted as an unfair competition in the protectionist side. When we render the service, we then say, who are our beneficiaries who need to receive the service? It's obviously the South African economically active citizens who are not necessarily competitive to sell themselves elsewhere except within South Africa. In some instances, they're not able to sell themselves elsewhere outside of their own local government or immediate communities. And still, in some instances, they're not able to sell themselves elsewhere outside of the economy or the economic sector for which they're capable. Like if somebody has worked in agriculture for some time and has got no any other skills except during seasonal periods for either planting or harvesting a crop. Now, our other beneficiary, obviously, is the South African employers who need foreign labor, as I mentioned earlier, in those instances where we realize generally that South African labor market cannot provide the requisite skills, then we have the South African employer as our beneficiary. For us to implement these policy principles, we have procedures that we follow, at the end of which we can be able to recommend for or against a foreigner being employed in South African labor market. The categories of permits that we find ourselves recommending on
are not very many of the 13 that are administered by the Department of Home Affairs. The general work permit is when an employer is requesting to employ a single person, a foreigner, into the enterprise. That goes from wanting to employ somebody as your domestic assistant up to wanting to employ people in groups who work in a mine or on a farm. But if you need them one by one, the type of permit is called the general work permit. I just indicated that there's a Section 2 permit that's according to that statute of 2004. When you need, and you this time refers to the employer, employees whose skills cannot be accessed within South Africa in a group, then that type of permit is the corporate permit. So Section 21(1) permit. And the permit then is issued to the employer without the department knowing who will be coming. We just see a number. You need 20, 30, 40, or 200. And when the 200 does come into the country in terms of the recommendation, obviously, that our sister Department of Home Affairs as well shall have agreed to issue that corporate permit to the corporate applicant who is an employer, then those individuals are then issued with what's called authorization certificates. We ended up interacting with the employer up to a recommendation stage. The third type is it's a rarity, a quota permit, because this can be issued to a foreigner even before the foreigner is promised any type of work in the country. And the exceptional skills permit, also the Section 19(4), is also a rarity. We seldom ever have requests for this, which is a permit that indeed, in genuine cases where there are no such skills in South Africa, an employer can employ to have that foreigner on the basis that the foreigner has exceptional skills required by the South African labor market. I'm going just to go shortly, Mr. Chairperson, through the procedures. It can be detailed, but however, I'll try to be as brief as can possibly be. Number one is that when we have an applicant, that would be an employer, we look into the fact that is it an application? And an application can only be one if it's on a application form obtained from the Department of Home Affairs. So that's why we say the employer collects the application form from the Department of Home Affairs. Or in some instances, the Home Affairs can then submit the application for that applicant to the Department of Labor on any of those forms mentioned there. These are just the form numbers, but all we're trying to say is that it better be on an official application form to introduce foreign labor into the country. When we get an application at the Department of Labor, to ask the first instance is that our client is looking for labor, and that kickstarts our recruitment and selection process to try and provide our client with labor with the requisite skills that shall have been described by the client in a job description. That is why when we get an application which necessarily will mention the job title and the job descriptions, we then register the opportunity, that employment opportunity in our system, and if for any reason the system has packed or whatever, we then register that opportunity manually somewhere in order to serve our client's employer. The next step, why we register this opportunity, is because we've got an employment services system where we have registered job seekers. We then are going to match the job requirements with the work seeker profiles of those that are on our job seeker database. Should the opportunity criteria be such that we do not get anybody from our database matching the criteria with a job profile, we then go extra outside of our own employment system and consult other sources of labor. That can include private employment agencies, and of course indeed it does include them. Depending on the area, we can even go to the CHIPS and other leaders of society, and we even consult local government, trying to scrape all over for the requisite skills that our client employer would be needing through the job description. The other thing that we do in the process of adjudicating this application, we then carry out what we call reactive labor compliance inspection to verify that the employer applicant or the applicant employer does comply with labor legislation of the country. And currently we've got seven statutes in that regard. Because if we find in any way that the applicant employer does not comply with any of the sections of any of the seven statutes, then we will not recommend positively for that employer to source labor from abroad. The two steps I've mentioned, registering, matching, and inspection, those are the steps where the department spends the most time with any application. Because the recruitment is a process that goes for more than a week. And after having recruited them, there are steps, selection steps, in some instances, including career counseling, job hunting skills for the prospective employees. Therefore, these steps together take the bulk of the time that we spend on a typical application. From the labor inspection, there will always be a compliance report by our labor inspectorate, which is the report we're going to base most of our recommendation on. I've already said that when that is done, the department has got a work permit application committee situated at head office where all applications will end up at, because the three steps that I've mentioned that take up most of the time happen at our service points called the labor center. From the labor center then, that recommendation with a cover letter from the labor center head is submitted to the provincial office. Provincial offices are headed by chief directors, provincial operations. And from that office then, the application with yet a cover letter is submitted to head office for adjudication purposes. It is from this head office that the recommendation against or for the issuance of the work permit will be done. When we then inform our provincial office to inform the Labour Centre, to inform the Home Affairs Regional Office that a permit has been recommended either for or against, we copy that communication to the Department of Home Affairs ahead of this, with the knowledge that when our client then, either through documentation or in person in whatever way, reaches head office or Home Affairs, Home Affairs is aware of the Department of Labour's recommendation. Otherwise, the procedure that our recommendation should go back the way it came to provincial office, through that to the Labour Centre, that's because the point of first interaction with our sister department is Regional Office, Home Affairs, and Labour Centre, Department of Labour. So with that recommendation, the Labour Centre then informs the Regional Office, which is likely the office where our applicant employer shall have obtained the official application form for a work permit. I think my first is just really the schematic, in short, routing of an application from Home Affairs. It has to be an application, a formal application form to the Department of Labour, which will then make a decision at the Work Permit Adjudication Committee at head office. And then that decision is routed through to the Department of Home Affairs head office. Depending what type of permit it is, the Department of Home Affairs then informs the employer. But sometimes, supposing it is an exceptional skills permit, it can be from Home Affairs direct to the very labour migrant, if it's an exceptional skills permit of somebody who hasn't got to work yet. Just to say what happens at this stage, we said there's an application form at Home Affairs, and these are some of the things that are required from the employer, that there should be an employment contract. If it's an individual permit, we say there are exceptional skills. The qualification should be converted into South African equivalence by SAQA. And at this stage, DOL, seeing the application form, will require to see the employment contract, will then register the opportunity and view the SAQA evaluation certificate, perform the matching, do the labour inspection, and if inter alia, especially for our designated employers, we will need more than the requirements we mentioned before, that there is some plan to develop our local skills, which would mean that the intention is not to keep on renewing and renewing the work permits for foreigners. And with those designated employers as well, that they do comply with employment equity plan. Although designated employers are aware that we need annual submissions of these plans and evidence that they are being followed, then that would be the end of the recommendation. This is just information person to this house that we do have the large account unit based at Home Affairs. Why it's mentioned is because the Department of Labour participates in the decisions to either allow large account enterprises onto the catalogue of large account companies or not. And those companies will then be the nominated companies on the list. But in all instances, we verify legal compliance when we get there for consideration that the applicant complies. And if it's a typical designated employer, which is does indeed happen on record. And then we either confirm or adjust the nomination list. And then we feedback to our sister company, the Department of Home Affairs. Shall I thank you, Chairperson?
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. That's a bit complicated, eh? Notwithstanding all of that, we should then almost immediately hand over to the industry. Can you switch off your mic as your scanner? We shall have to get copies made available to members from the presentation. Are we having somebody who's going to be making copies? The reason also we'd be having this session and hence, you know, prioritizing it, you know, economic development officials also is informed by our own new growth path. Among others, it really focuses more on agro-processing, which, you know, sharing is part of. Because you have a ship. Before you sell a ship, the economic benefits out of a ship. So sharing is one of those. And what that does, that sharing does, it talks to jobs, it creates jobs for intents and purposes. Not only jobs, but also it creates entrepreneurship. So that you are to have a country that the minister earlier on spoke about 26 new jobs in quarter one of 2012 that were created. I would imagine here as we listen more and more, we should really be able to talk additional jobs, not sharing of jobs, so to speak. But that's the background also that we are here. Welcome, sir. Okay, we shall then allow the industry wool growers to present to us. Thank you. What are you presenting?
Chairperson, thank you very much on behalf of the wool growers for this opportunity. With your permission, we'd like to play a very short DVD and then do our presentation after that. Would that be in order?
Okay, so 5 minutes DVD, which we allowed. It won't take long, thanks. We can distribute popcorns and switch off and so on. Hey, can you switch off?
History of sheep and wool farming. This long history has established wool growers who high standard, and first-stage processing in South Africa is modern and technologically sophisticated. Wool is produced in most parts of South Africa under extensive, semi-extensive, or intensive conditions. It is then traded in a sophisticated free market business environment into the international marketplace, where supply and demand forces determine price levels. Wool sheep breeders are very conscious of the dangers of black or stained fibers, as well as modulated fibers such as kim. The principle of integrated quality management from farm to container is keenly supported and continuously developed by all sectors of the trade. Quality management systems are promoted at all levels, with the aim to continuously monitor and upgrade quality standards in line with market requirements. Another key priority for the South African stockman is resource-based conservation, with the clean green approach as a natural business ethic. Internal and external stock remedies are used sparingly and only when there is no alternative. The on-farm surgical process of moving to remove unwanted skin folds from the animal's breech is not practiced in South Africa, and the South African Merino has, over the years, been bred for less skin folds or a smoother body conformation. As a result, there is less wool growth in the animal's breech area, and the infestation with maggots from blowfly is limited. It is also common practice among SA wool growers to shear the breech area of the sheep approximately halfway through the growth cycle of the fleece, or when it's required. This is called crouching and eliminates a moist, wool environment where blowfly can flourish. The largest proportion of the South African wool clip comes from harsh, low rainfall areas where blowfly is less prevalent. Should it become apparent that there is evidence of fly strike in a flock, a quick, localized application of a registered pesticide to the breech area to kill the blowfly is standard practice. Offensive products, such as organochlorine parasiticides and arsenic-based compounds, have all been banned in South Africa. Special effort is also made at farm level to educate growers in the correct treatment of exoparasites on sheep in order to reduce toxic residues in wool grease to within internationally accepted limits, thereby minimizing the environmental impact of wool production. The South African wool clip is predominantly a merino clip, suitable for the apparel trade. Between 65 and 70% of the clip comprises fleece wools, with the balance being locks, belly wools, and mans. More than 60% qualifies for the most sought-after styles, mainly good top-making, bed top-making, and spinner styles. Tip wools are high-yielding, with more than 60% of the clip yielding at least 60% clean. Seed contamination is limited, with more than 80% of the clip normally exhibiting very low levels of 2% or less. The fiber diameter ranges from 18 to 26 microns, with more than 80% of the clip finer than 22 microns. Long wools, 16 millimeters and above, normally comprise more than 65% of the clip, while shorter qualities, ideally suited for the fine woolen apparel trade, are freely available throughout the season. The incidence of tender wool in the clip is limited due to sound power management practices, which are aimed at minimizing fleece shock during events, such as lambing, and by providing adequate supplementary feed during droughts, which occur fairly regularly in South Africa. Fleece wool consignments rarely fall below 35 newtons per kilotech staple strength, as any tender wool is classed out and packed separately on the farm. South African clip is tested and certified by the Wool Testing Bureau of South Africa, an autonomous private company, for mean fiber diameter, vegetable matter content, and clean yield, in accordance with procedures laid down by the International Wool Textile Organization. The Wool Testing Bureau also contributes significantly to the quality assurance program of Cape Wools, core samples submitted for objective measurement are routinely screened for traces of contamination. Length and strength testing is also available as an option for producers who wish to have their clips additionally measured, or for exporters who wish to conduct post-sale testing. The good fiber diameter and fiber length distribution characteristics in top form makes it possible for these rules to be spun into any conceivable commercial yarn cut required by the apparel industry. Its softness of handle makes it ideally suited for modern, soft-against-the-skin products in fabric or knitwear. Rigid passing and woodshed preparation procedures on the farm ensure that the occurrence of stained or pigmented fiber in beef lines is low, making cape wools also eminently suitable for the pastel trade. Other means, such as contracts. Auctions have been centralized in Port Elizabeth and take place once a week during the season from August to June. Prices paid for cape wools are determined by free market supply and demand forces and are closely linked to the international price for apparel wool, which is determined by the Australian market. Most of the clip is marketed overseas through members of the South African Wool and Mohair Buyers Association. Only registered members are allowed to bid at auctions, which are held under the auspices of the South African Wool Exchange. The average bale max is 150 kilograms, and dumping is carried out on a pre-sale basis. All greasy and semi-processed wool destined for the export market is containerized. South African ports are served by an efficient container shipping service to Europe, America, and the Far East. The sheep and wool industry in South Africa is a well-established industry with a long, rich history. It is from this heritage that a consistently high-quality wool is produced and successfully marketed in the international arena.
Thanks for that. You obviously are not going to repeat that background, because I quickly went through your presentation, which also has a bit of a background to when it happened. Yeah, you can just take us through quickly.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity today. As you all received a copy of the presentation, I see
name and whoever else you are with, and then can proceed.
Okay, I'm Eric Trinsler. I'm the chairman of the National Wool Growers Association, and with me on my right hand side is Mrs. Elise van der Westhuizen, our facilitator through AgriSA, and with me together are representatives of the wool industry, Mr. De Beer, Mr. De Jager, and Mr. Stotz. Chairman, thank you very much.
If they could just lift their hand as the name of the court.
There they are at the back. Full force. It's Mrs. Elise van der Westhuizen here with me. And there from the left-hand side, you've got Mr. Stotz from VKB, Mr. Louis De Beer from Cape Wool, and Mr. James De Jager from CMW. Am I now in order, Mr. Chairman? Thank you very much. Chairman, by starting off, I would like my sincere appreciation and thank you very much for your cooperation in this very critical issue for the South African farmers, especially the wool growers. Thank you very much for attending our Congress last week, where we can engage and convince you of this huge problem lying ahead for us.
Let me put it very clearly to the House that we as wool farmers are really not against any procedures or goals of government to comply with crop job creation for South African citizens. What our biggest problem is actually the way the working and the working procedures and the way labour deals with this issue. There are a lot of issues concerning us, and that's the time frame that's usually needed, as well as the complicated way of in which we have to deal with permits. Chairman, out of the DVD, you would have seen that it is a very skillful job. To shear a sheep, you cannot take a person from the street and learn him in 1 or 2 hours how to shear a sheep. It's almost a process of 3 years. Now, I'll go quickly through a presentation that will give you more background on why it's so urgent for us and what we've done in the past. And if I'm a bit harsh on some of the departments, please forgive me for that, but that is the emergency of this whole issue. Mr. Chairman, as general background, I think you've seen that we are part of SAKU agreement between countries, between Botswana, Lesotho, Namibia, Swaziland, and that's also to facilitate the cross-border movement of goods between territories of these member states, and also to create an effective, transparent, and democratic institutions. Also to promote conditions for a fair competition in the common custom area. Also to substantially increase investments opportunities in this common area. To enhance the economic development, to promote the integration of member states, to facilitate the equitable sharing of revenue arising from customs. Also to facilitate the development of common policies and strategies. Mr. Chairman, also the general background of the corporate permits in the agricultural sector is very important for us. The SAKU agreement emphasized South Africa's obligation to assist in economic activities of neighboring countries. In certain instances, farmers and businesses are waiting up to 2 years to receive feedback on applications for corporate permits. In certain instances, the same farmer had to reapply 4 times for the same permit, resulting in 4 times the expense of applying these permits. Now, Chairman, I'm not going to go through this slide. I think you've seen the background. All I want to say is that South Africa produces around about 46 million kilos of wool, and the annual turnover is around about 2 billion. Whereby Lesotho also produces 3.5 million tons. Why I'm saying that? Because we are very dependent on our Lesotho shares. Being a farmer in the Free State myself, living about 100 kilometers from the border, I grew up between the Lesotho people, and these people are coming in generations sharing South African clip. And they almost share, up until now, about 50% of our clip. And I've got an emotional plea to this House to revisit the treatment of our Lesotho people. These people have got also great and big jobless issues with them. That's the poorest of the poorest people. And to leave 1,500 to 2,000 jobs in Lesotho be gone, I think there's also a big downfall on the South African side, as you can see the support base and the support staff that we normally use to share that sheep. For every one shearer in the shearing shed, we need about 3 support staff in that sheep. And these people are coming from South Africa. The support staff are mainly South Africans that works on their farms. So in the long term, if we couldn't get solutions for this problem, these jobs will also then be discontinued because farmers will go away from sheep farming and they go cattle farming or mutton farming of sheep. So, Mr. Chairman, dealing with the permit itself, that sharing services provide a supply for a corporate permit to allow the city services as support for the shortfall, and that's very important, for the shortfall in local sharing numbers. Sharing services providers to apply for a corporate permit at one central office rather than who produces applying for permits on a provincial and regional basis, as pointed by the previous speaker. We want, as an institution, to go to a central point and to apply for the permits there at the central point of entry. The wool growers, Mr. Chairman, is an AgriCETA accredited training provider. And I want to take you quickly through the 2011-12 financial, the following numbers of trainees underwent in training, and that's now for South African people. So we've got a fully training program in South Africa to train our own people. Blade sharing, a total of 276 new recruits, and 130 intermediate and advanced trainees. Courses with them. And there you can see what happened to the machine shearing. And you see the two on the DVD, the one with the blade shearing and the one with the machine. Chairman, I think it's very important for the House to take cognizance of what happened in this year from a South African point of view. And there we pointed out a lot of shearing competitions that we have held through the country, and we do this specially to train the people and to uplift the people and to get the people be proud of what they are doing. And there you can see how many championships we've done. We are also very proud on our industry being taking part in the Tri-Nation Shearing Test in New Zealand. And there you can see the results, and we've got the two of the champion and the reserve champion coming from South Africa, and our employers from BKB and CMW. And there you can see the names, Willie Hans and Shaweni. So there you can see what are the results of our training procedures in South Africa. So Chairman, dealing with a specific issue here, I'm going to use CMW as an example. And the following are the numbers of shearers from South Africa and Lesotho registered for employment with CMW Shearing. And there you can see them. Now in the bottom end of the slide you can see that the national wool growers from our wool trust spent approximately over 2 million for shearer training. And we can add to that a fairly large amount of money spent by AgriCETA, brings around about 2.5 million. That we spend from the industry funds training South African people for the sharing. We train about 600 shearers per annum, and approximately 16% pursuing a sharing career after that. You might have a question of why so little people continue with this job, and I think that the only answer, it is very hard work to share a sheep. To bend your back for 10 months a year, sharing every day of your life for 5 days a week, about 80 to 100 sheep per day. You can work out what is the carrying capacity or the mass that they move if a sheep normally weighs about 50 kilos. Then you can imagine how many kilos one person moves in a year's time or over his lifetime. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to bother you with the procedures. But I only want to emphasize what we've done, what this company has done to try to get to the bottom of the point. And you can, if you've got it in front of you, what procedures they have followed over a period of time to see what, or to get the permits, and the season is starting on the 1st of June in the Western Cape. The shearing process starts here for the rest of the country, and these farmers have already started shearing in this area, and they cannot start shearing because there's no shearers available for them. So there, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to go through every slide, but you can see on the 6th of February 2012, the 9th March of 2012, you can see also the response of the department on the 2nd of May. So, Mr. Chairman, yes, I think I've said enough to emphasize our big problem. And as I said earlier, we're not against any government policy. We only got a problem with the working procedures to get these port permits. And that's why it's so important for us, because our shearing season had yet started and we couldn't comply to the farmers. And the problem is the sheep have to be shorn. They can't be left over for a year to grow 12 months or 40, 24 months of wool. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for listening to me and giving me the opportunity.
Thank you. That then concludes the presentations both from the department and also from the industry. Welcome, Mama Twana, Mr. Tango. I really must say that one sympathizes with the industry, just listening to the Labor Department presenting, you know, all the complicated processes. Once again, this really should talk very much to the very issue related to the period of time it takes as you do business in our country. There's been some bit of criticism on our part, and again, you know, bureaucracy does take or play a role, so to speak, and we are really obliged to do something about that, you know, as government, so that it cannot be business as usual. However, we need to engage, you know, with the presentation themselves. I'm not sure if you want to make any comments from economic development just before we break for tea or coffee, and then we come back with all the questions. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just wanted to say briefly that without doing a formal presentation, that while we understand the issues raised by the Department of Labor, we do think there are a few issues that should also be taken into account in a case like this. The one issue is that, you know, you'll very rarely find an absolute shortage of skilled people. It's usually about the cost of employing people. So on the one hand, we think that it is critically important that industries have access to the skills they need quickly and effectively, because it does create other jobs for South Africans. On the other hand, it is a concern that I suspect that one of the problems is that we're not paying these people very well. Now, that may be an economic necessity, but I do think that would be one concern. Having said that, I don't think it's adequate to say, unless there's an absolute shortage, we delay giving people permits. And as you said, where people need people, it has to be made as easy as possible. I do think that the multiplier effect of bringing in a skilled person has to be taken into account. That where if you employ somebody, it will create other jobs for South Africans. See, that simply is displacement is a problem. Yeah? So if bringing in people who are skilled maintains the wool industry in the country, you're creating many more jobs than what you might think you're displacing. The second issue I have is about regional development, that I am concerned that we should not be treating immigrants from neighboring countries the same as we treat immigrants from overseas. You know, to be blunt, if these were people coming from Australia, I can see making it a difficult and bureaucratic process, but honestly, these are people from across the border who we all know in a country that has been impoverished and undermined by the history of colonialism and apartheid in the region. And to act like we can simply say, no, we will deny their nationals jobs or make it difficult for their nationals to get jobs here is, to me, a bit of a problem. You know, there may be circumstances where we would do that, but I would have thought the very fact that from the Sotho should be taken into account in this kind of decision. But again, to us, I think the bigger issue on the import of skills is always going to be, does it in the long term lead to more jobs for South Africans if we import them or not? And not treating it like it's just a zero-sum game. You know, if we bring in one skilled person, that automatically displaces more South Africans.
Okay. Then that should really conclude at the end all these presentations. Members, what I would ask us to do, there is tea here before it gets cold. Maybe we come back now, time from this watch is 52 minutes past 10. If we just come back, say, at 10 after 11, sorry. Quick break, stretching, smoking, drinking tea.
Je space without the internet. Are there records available? Yeah, but we've offered it. Doesn't often tell you. Want to tell you?
How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. Good to see you,
man. How are you?
I'm sure by today we'll but either way I think I'll go. When are you leaving? Are you waiting for the doctor?
Yeah.
But listen, I understand because I'm exactly the same way on the other side. When I went to Tora, I want to come back to Cape Town.
Thank you.
May we settle down?
What's wrong with you today?
Huh? According to my watch, we are 10 minutes after 10, 11, which is the time we are agreed to reconvene at. We have listened to all the presentations.
Thank you. Chair. My name is François Samuel from Portfolio Comments on Labour. As you would understand, Labour cut across all fundamental aspects of your life. You will bear with my ignorance because probably it's for the first time one attends to a meeting of this cluster. But the presentation, three of them to me, they speak too much to. I'm not sure whether I'm going to be relevant here. You'll quickly stop. Labour is about practical issues. We don't feel that's a lot of labour. If I'm relevant here, you must quickly stop me so that I shouldn't waste the time for the meeting. To me, it speaks a lot to those people who deal with technical knowledge, technical issues, more than broader picture. Because if I was to be relevant in a relevant meeting, if I'm irrelevant in this one, I'm talking about the ownership, I'm talking about RDB standards with regard to partnership, with regard to black empowerment, I'll speak to that. I'll speak to health and safety. Looking at the DVD, for instance, that's why I'm saying it's a little bit too technical for me. It doesn't speak to the bigger picture. Maybe it's because it's for the first time one attends this meeting, this nature. If I'm irrelevant, I'm sorry, but it doesn't necessarily speak to me as a member of the Portfolio Committee. It doesn't really say anything to me. I'm sorry, I'll stop there, and I won't come back again because I shouldn't be wasting your time.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, having listen to all the presentations. There was one from the Labour Department which we didn't get the hard copy, and I think we decided on this Portfolio Committee that we will not entertain presentations if we don't have it on hard copy. So it's if we can get it, it's good, because otherwise tomorrow somebody can argue with you that they didn't say something and then we don't have the evidence for it. Either that or that the PG can put it on the net so that we can extract it from there, then it will be good. You know, it seems to me that the problem here is with the Labour Department. It's a system where there's a whole lot of red tape to get people from the Sotho into South Africa to do the specialized job of sheep shearing. And, you know, we live in a continent that is Africa, and we talk about the African Renaissance, and we talk about the Africa Dream, and then we put all this red tape in the place so that people from Africa cannot be accommodated in South Africa, and I think that's wrong. So I think, you know, the farmers also should be protected from people, can be exploited by people that the Labour Department would say these people are sheep shearers because they put their name up and they don't know nothing about the job. And then they send those people to the farmer and then, you know, he has a big loss and he still needs those people from the Sotho to come and fix the problem. And you have people in South Africa, I don't want to generalize, but lots of people are very lazy as well. They don't want to work as hard as other people. And then, no, I'm not saying it as all of the people, but you get those people. And if somebody puts his name up and says, I want to work, there are people that actually don't want to work. You know, they get there and then they want to be the boss the next day as well. So you must be protected from this. People must have qualifications or have a track record. That's all I'm trying to say. And then I'm sure that in a perfect world where all these hoops you have to jump through to get those people in the country, it would be working well. But if it's a system like we are having here, we know there's a lot of problems with getting permits and again, I'm coming back to the red tape that says that, you know, it's designed not to employ people from other countries. And I think we should maybe look at the system and say, if this area is a specialized area where you need specialized people that need training for 3 years, and then they can maybe transfer their skills to South Africa, to South African people in the long run, we should put an exemption on those lot of red tape, put a shortcut in there so that those skills can be transferred to South Africans over the long term to benefit South Africa. I hope it makes sense. And then, you know, on a lighter note, that this department has created 650,000 job opportunities in South Africa. We shouldn't worry about 300 people that wants to work in South Africa. I'm sure the minister would welcome other people as well, you know. Thank you.
Mr. Mutan.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Zamo Thapo Mutau from the Labour Portfolio Committee. Just a couple of questions for clarity to Mr. Prinsloo. I think you mentioned that the sharing season may be over now, because it happens between June and August. I just want to get that clarity. In other words, I'm just asking, are we discussing something that has already happened? In other words, has the horse bolted and we're looking ahead now? Because if that's the case, then we can work on a compromise. That's the first thing. The second one is that I'm just curious, and you touched on it briefly, where you refer to the training that you undertake of sharers, and that 16% of them pursue the career, but the other 84% sort of disappear because it's a hard work and all that, and I understand that. But do you keep a database of these people so that when you need them, maybe you can go back to them and say, guys, we need you, it's that time again, and maybe they can come back. The other question is to Mr. Nong from the Department of Labor. The application referred to by CMW, apparently they applied for about 500. I see there are two numbers here. One it says 500, the other one says 400, but that's neither here nor there. In any case, they got 20 out of the 400 or 500, and they got two out of the other two that we can. What was the rationale? Why give them 20 when they applied for 500? What were the reasons given for not giving them the whole quota of that? It's very interesting for me to hear that. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Abram?
Thank you, gentlemen. Chairperson, I have a couple of questions for National Wool Growers. Firstly, Chair, if we want development in the country and we make it difficult for those that want to invest in whatever form to access permits, visas, all that sort of stuff, then, Chairperson, the cumulative effect over the long term will be that we will be branded as a country where it is difficult to do business, and we don't want that. Now, what I would like to know from Mr. Prinsloo is how many members has National Wool Growers got now? How many of them are new producers, new producer members? How much are the new farmers producing? Whether the new farmers also require labor from the neighboring territories in terms of sharing, which is a specialized job, as you've heard. The number of producers that I'm aware of that operate in the suit, and because of the poor marketing systems there, South Africa, especially NWGA, I am aware, assists those poor farmers to market country, what is the potential of increasing wool producers amongst new farmers? There will be new ones. If Mr. Prinsloo could give us a response to that, and I'll leave it at that for the President Chairperson. From Botman.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, Chair, let us talk about the unemployment and poverty in Lesotho and say that is not, I think this committee cannot do a thing around that, because that would be an issue for state to state, where the two states have to engage in terms of the situation in Lesotho and how South Africa as a country can then assist that particular situation to improve economically. And because that would cloud the discussion that we are having at the moment. So it's a matter for the two states, the policies agreement that can be developed in terms of assisting Basotho with that. Secondly, when we talk about the issue of permitting, and the presentation shows us that there have been South Africans who have been trained. Because our view is that as Home Affairs, if we bring skills in the country, the intention is for that particular skill to remain in the country and to benefit more South Africans. Now, if you bring that particular skill, and the South Africans have been trained according to the presentation, and ultimately the South Africans who voluntarily came for the training decide not to pursue the career, then something is happening. And we need to find out what is this thing that is causing them not to stay within this particular career. And if we can get those particular issues, the issue of laziness, I do not want to agree with that. Because if we have to take that particular approach, no South African will be employed. Because every employer will then rally behind the fact that South Africans are lazy, and we cannot label our own people with that. We can't. We are saying, let us go deeper into the matter and check the issues around the non-staying of South Africans within that particular career that they have decided to come and get trained within. I don't see myself deciding to go to a training for accounting, and ultimately I decide I don't want to be an accountant after I have graduated. There might be some issues that are driving me to be that. Secondly, it might be, yes, I only went because there's a training coming, I never had an interest, it's just that I'm jobless, and then I got there, and ultimately I find, no, it's not what I'm meant to do. I want to do something else. All those things will assist us to come to a situation to take a decision around this. Otherwise, we are running a risk of taking a decision to say yes to permitting or no to permitting, and ultimately we are losing the whole cause and the core of the problem. And for us to address the problem once and for all, we need to get a detailed information around all these particular things pertaining to sharing and classes, teaching, classing or whatever. But lastly, Chair, we have to build our own skills. We cannot continuously rely. And at the same time, whilst we agree that African Renaissance is ours, yes, it's ours, but not at the expense of other countries. We are not going to explode those countries. It's because sometimes we may find that Basotho are being preferred because they are a cheaper labor as opposed to what South African laws are actually requiring for the workforce of South Africa. So we need to get all that information. And I think for now, Chair, it is important that we need not come to a conclusion on this thing. Go back and get the other side of the story, and then we can be able to conclude. Thank you, Chair.
Followed by Mama Christmas. Richard. Eric Nyagamba from Control Committee on Labour, representing the ANC. Chairperson, I think the first solicitation by the Department of Agriculture towards the end of the presentation, there are recommendations of some kind of helping, in fact, bringing the affected departments together with the industry that is here today to look at options. Obviously, options would be in terms of the current procedures and the legislation. Now, any legislation has its own process. When you amend any legislation, there's a process that has to be engaged in. I think that's a progressive recommendation that I've had on recommendations that I've made here. Because you will be bringing these departments together, looking at the procedures that are followed, what is it that can be done in order that procedure to be quick or quickly yield the results that are expected. And I think that's what, but I think the what has been left is organized labor. Because for me, once you want to talk about a procedure that is followed as a result of legislation, is not a matter that only affects the industry and government alone. There's a component of labor. That's one for me, sir. The second one is that you say it's good because I'm serving in another committee, not on labor alone. In public service and administration, we had a presentation from Treasury in relation to the review of the procurement, state procurement policy. And key to that is local content. It's local content. Now, I'm leaving that share with this, listening to the presentation from the industry today. It's like, to me, they are suggesting that this industry, one, must be allowed to use labor from the soil. Pardon me if I misunderstood the presentation. But I think the one I'm hearing. At the same time, I think the previous speaker touched on this, the area of training. Who was trained? My assumption is that the training focused on the labor in South Africa. I will understand that. Now, I think if that is what is happening, then the industry, for me, cannot continue to come to Parliament and say we must be given opportunity to employ labor from the Sotho. If there are South African workforce that is trained by the industry. You have South African workforce that has been trained, and then, but at the same time, you want to continue to export skills from another country. I don't understand. I think it would be better, Chair, if there would be fair tax clarification in relation to that. And linked to that, Chair, they also spoke of, I know, training involves money. But there's no sector where there is no sector education and training authority. And there are grants that are dispersed by those sectors. So money that has been used in training, does that include the grant that they receive from the agricultural sector? The last point is on labor, on that presentation. Cannot be clarified because there are types of work permits. I think there are four. It's general, it's coverage, it's quota, and it's exceptional case. There's reference to a particular legislation here. Which legislation that you are referring to here? Because if you get your F-19, F-21, F-19, I think that F stands for section. Which legislation are you referring to? Thank you very much for now, sir.
Mama, please, Mr. Put up and sit down.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you. I will start with a presentation, the last, where you are suggesting that the Department of Labor, Department of Home Affairs, Agriculture and National Rural Association. I just need clarity because all these departments they have a steering committee, and at the end of National Rural Growers Association, it's saying fund the steering committee over its cost. I just need to clarify there that why each department should not fund their own steering committee. Most of the questions already my colleagues have gone into, but I just want to find out from Home Affairs and even Labor for why it takes so long for the application to come from. Maybe here they can wait for 2 years. Maybe they can even reapply for 4 times. I just want to find out what is this mean. As for the workers who are trained, you know, I don't understand really. In South Africa, we are talking about creating jobs and more jobs for our people. But here, the wool growers, you put other countries before your own people. I just want to be clarified. It's because of because here in South Africa we have a labor laws. It's because you want cheap labor or what? And again, on this table, 208. Where are they? The grower. This one. 208 to 209. 2010,
Mr. Bangman?
Thank you, Chair. I might have arrived late, but I trust I'm Ngaba Banga from Agriculture and Forestries. I represent the people of South Africa. I think that's very important. Now, mine is very simple.
You are also advocating marching out of the committee meeting.
In representing the people of South Africa.
That we did yesterday.
Representing the people of South Africa. Okay. Mine, in terms of training, firstly, I want to know that for your training requirements or trained personnel, what is it that could make you comfortable and say in your targets that you have, that it is to have the required human resource for a trained personnel? I don't see it coming here, that this is the targeted number of people in your industry that you would want to be trained. And also, I'm not hearing you clearly and saying these are the main reasons. We are training these people. Amongst the reasons why we are not getting more people to get through to this training process, is it because of apathy? Is it because of conditions of service? Is it because of the industry itself? Just give us reasons, because we must understand why people are not coming. Yeah, I think we must understand, we must not just say that some people are not interested, why? And then I think we should understand. Is it because of really conditions of service? I also do not say, I do not buy an idea, and I think we must refrain from this, because it's very dangerous, all of us, that South Africans are made. No, I'm not talking to you per se. Yeah, no. Because we must always put it in a context. You go to Rwanda, there are Rwandans who do not do anything in their own country. It's a universal challenge. People, when they are in their country, they got more comfortable in their comfort zone. When you come and leave rural areas and come to Cape Town, you work so hard because they're not closer to areas where you can ask salt from your own people. Therefore, you work hard in Cape Town than working hard where you come from sometimes. Therefore, this thing, we must put it in that context sometimes. So that people who come to South Africa are hard workers. They are obliged to work hard. They have nobody to beg from. Therefore, that we should always understand. But let me go further back. It is also within our listening institute from economics that within, it is our responsibility as government, within the whole context of promoting growth and creating economic development in our country, that we address the barriers that make it difficult for business to operate. If Department of Labor have some barriers who are not making these farmers to be able to produce the processes and the wood production that they're supposed to do, because they are barriers. It's not acceptable, for instance, that people apply four times every day, submit applications, they are not responded to, they submit another proposal. It's unjust administration. Therefore, that cannot be accepted. We should all condemn and say the process is to facilitate economic participation and services in this country to make smooth. It is a responsibility of all governments, labor, economic development, to make sure that people come to South Africa to operate business, things like this. It's one part that I want us maybe the Department of Labor to come out clearly. How do we make the conditions of service operations for this sector more easier than the difficulties that they are confronted with? But I agree with an honorable member who said, we must go look deeper and say, what makes our people not to come into the mainstream of the service? Then we need an oversight to check what happened to the people trained, why did States, if they go, is it because of conditions of service? We might have to go and look into that. But we must grow this. We currently talk about 500 and something people now. After 14 years, 17 years of democracy, that was true. What happened in the past? And then what happened currently? What will happen in the future? Our prediction should look at the past, today, and in the future. Because if this is the most important element, honorable member, is that we need to give a focus. Our government is focusing to skills, small skills empowerment, the youth of this country, 70% of it is faced with youth unemployment. How can we use this service to make sure that we empower our people, to make sure that they grow? Therefore, we as parliament, we must take responsibility to where we're supposed to take on the environment and say we are going to correct this service. The department should, the sector also should take responsibility and say we are going to improve the condition and also are going to improve services of the training services of our. Basically, those are the issues that I wanted to raise. Thank you.
The other day I went to England, Mr. Van Dalen. I just said this one unemployed friend of mine lives in a posh apartment. He can even afford to hire a car. That's in England. That's talking to the welfare system that we have. There's a point I think I wanted also to raise rather. Is related to the slides from the industry, which I would imagine talks directly to the Department of Labor. If it is a fair stand, I'm throwing it. But the very first slide that has a title, the general background of the corporate permits in the agricultural sector, very last one. Unfortunately, the practices of the South African government do not address that is taking those authority of South Africa with regard to the said treaties. Now, in other words, the agreements that are being entered into. Which also immediately takes me to another issue which is not relevant for now. I'm informed that South Africa is a signatory to the ILO with regard to your fishermen or fisherfolk, that all of them have to be part of any labor relations legislation in their respective country. And I'm told this is the legislation or the agreement that has since been signed some 3 years ago. But until today, our fisherfolk are still governed under the Merchant Shipping Act, which make them so vulnerable. I just thought I might wish to just throw that on, so that we are able to see the context at which we might wish to look into. I think the point there, more than anything else, talks to those agreements or treaties. The last point I want to raise, the level in which consultation shall have happened by the Department of Labor with both the agriculture sector and perhaps the home affairs and also with the industry sector. When such regulations, you know, we were dealing at one point with the Northern Standard by Environment Department. I think it was year before last. Was it last year? Last year. And it was almost October or November. And what was becoming very clear is that they were going to publish those for comments around December time, when everybody is out of work for all intents and purposes, not even concentration. Now that is a trend which is quite unfortunate by some government departments, that these regulations are published during a period in which people are very busy doing other things outside of work. You don't have time to look at newspapers and read all these, you know, published regulations, so to speak. In short, consultation with also consultations with the industry when arriving at those regulations. You can respond perhaps starting from LAIF, going down to Department of Agriculture, lastly with the industry.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I will answer the question from the Honourable Member about the red tape, that means our procedures and policies that are not accommodating to employ the foreigners. It's not about that, Honourable Member. According to our principles, as we indicated to our presentation, and we are working together with the Department of Home Affairs on this, before we recommend the import to import the seeds from abroad, we need to ensure that all the employers tested the local, and then we'll recommend unless there is no skill in the country. So we are not against of importing the skill from abroad if it's not available in the country. And secondly, for example, even the foreigners, if they are in the country legally, they are protected by our labor law. They are entitled, for instance, to receive their UI benefits if they are unemployed. So the labor laws are covering the foreigners if they came to South Africa legally. And then second, there was also something about the skills transfer. For instance, in our ESB that is in Netflix, we have a clause that is talking about the transfer of skills whereby the employer, if for instance they requested they recruited from abroad maybe 5 foreigners for a period of 5 years. So we'll allow them unless they will ensure that they will transfer the skills to the locals. So that one which is covered by our ESD. And the honorable member from the Labour Committee wanted to know why the application we didn't recommend it according to the number of employers requested. The employer submitted the application, one of our labor center in Free State. They wanted to recruit 400 shift sharers and 200 full classers from Lesotho. But through the verification process with the client, the head office established that in Fixback Farm, only applications that are available are only 20 and 2 full classers. That's why the committee recommended for that number. The employer was also advised that he must apply separately for the balance of vacancies in other provinces. Because the reason we are advising the employer on that, because each and every employer, before we recommend an application, we need to do the inspection. So if we can allow them to apply centrally, so it will be difficult for us to ensure that the employer is compliant. So the employer was advised, Mrs. Sanders says that they are from AgriSA. They requested a meeting with the officials of the department. The meeting took place on the 22nd of May. And then during our discussion, for instance, they raised that they want us to review our decision because they want to employ more people from abroad. And they also indicated that as the employer, for instance, take more help, their responsibility is to apply corporate work permits on behalf of the farmers. And then these employees will be assigned to all these farmers that are responsible to pay for the salary. In our discussion, we also advise them, which according to our policies and procedures in the Department of Farm Affairs, the migrant workers are not allowed to pass from one employer to another. We issue the permit for the migrant foreigner to work at that particular employer until the permit expires. In our resolution, we also advise them that they must assist their clients to submit their application in different labor centers of the Department of Labor. When it comes to the turnaround time, our turnaround time to process the application is 6 days. But sometimes the application is delayed because of the issues I was already mentioned. For example, the inspection, if the employer doesn't comply, the application will be delayed because we need to wait until the employer complies with the labor legislation. And then the others, I'll hand it over to my colleague because one was working technically on the application. to elaborate further. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Thanks, colleague. When I was listening, just trying to note from the beginning, some of our statements, although they sound like they need responses to, the direct questions I think have been responded to, but there was one specific that said, the presentation makes mention of sections of the law, what law is that? It is the Immigration Amendment Act, number 19 of 2004. It amended the Immigration Act, number 13 of 2002. And the regulations were then promulgated in 2005. The latest amendment, Act number 13 of 2011, although having been attested to by the State President, hasn't got regulations yet, so we do not refer to it in our procedures, because without regulations, you see, we are not able to enforce. So that's where we picked up this. That is one specific question that I had. There was one general one, which I think from the presentation alluded to by the chairperson, that South African government, I'm not able to quote there, but it said something like, either the government does not comply or implement the bilateral labor agreements with four countries of SADC, but the presentation didn't term them as bilateral agreements. It's called something like treaties. I don't know if that's the same thing. It meant the bilateral labor agreements, we've got those with the kingdoms of Lesotho and Swaziland and the republics of Botswana and Mozambique. They so called that the one we've got with the Republic of Mozambique is still called agreement between South Africa and Portuguese East Africa. So all they are. They've not been either rescinded, revised, or amended. I found them there 13 years ago when I joined the department. So, you know, they are there. But just to make the House aware that these agreements refer to the recruitment of foreign labor, specifically in the mining industry. And in that sector, not to all the mining houses, to those that are affiliated with the Chamber of Mines. And coincidentally, these are the only applications that when they come, our sister department, Home Affairs, does not have to ask for a recommendation from the Department of Labor, because they are paid those agreements, and there is an agreed employment agency called DEBA, the Employment Bureau of Africa. I just hope that that's what the member referred to by treaties. We refer to them as bilateral labor agreements. I think we comply with those, because DEBA does employ from these countries in terms of those agreements still, and the recruited come via office of the Department of Home Affairs only. That's the only exception in our bilateral handling or permitting with our sister department, Home Affairs. If I'm not in terms of priority chairperson, just to keep that, I'm just trying to touch on what I had plus my quality note. On our consultative processes, we refer ourselves back home as the tripartite, Home Affairs, Labour, and trade and industry. Trade and industry slightly selectively for those corporate permits that will come as a result of a foreign direct investor having been allowed to come and invest in South Africa. In more cases than one, the foreign investor then says, for me to carry out the contract, he shall have won a contract of some sort. For me to say I can build a particular one than my competitor. That's because I have competent labor somewhere that I need to bring along. And that's where the Department of Labor comes in, to say the people you'd like to bring along, hopefully none of their skills are repeated in South Africa. And that's where we then come in as a member of that tripartite. Then we will have more than one Department of Labor's recommendation. That is just by scope where the DTI will come in. Otherwise, for the rest of the corporate applications and processing thereof, it is mainly the Department of Home Affairs which says to Labor, your recommendation, please. Can we bring this number of people into South Africa, or can we not bring one of them at all? Which dovetails to an example mentioned today of 400 applied for, and we say 20, because the principle tells us, we do not build a foreign labor pool in South Africa from which anybody can tap as and when one needs it. Therefore, our interaction with all our clients, the employers, is to establish inter alia, are the people you're looking for equal to the vacancies you have at a particular time of our life? In some instances, many of our clients will then tell you of projections, like in the seasonal way. We have been advised by agriculture service, citrus season is among the longest of the seasons. Then you look at what a corporate permit will give you permission to do. There is one season in a year. A corporate permit gives you permission, says it's valid for 12 months, but no season is 12 months. So you've got that corporate permit. The next year, you're not saying, I still have this one valid for 12 months or even for 24. One applies for yet another corporate permit. That is why, from the Department of Labor's perspective, we at all times, when we consider this, would like to agree with the employer about the number of vacancies versus the number of the labor migrants we'd like to bring. And by the way, that is provided these skills are not there. I've had a member of the portfolio committee alluding to this problem that we have. I had a member asking, can we try and find out if people are trained, why are they not taking up those positions? And somehow it has been linked to the assessments by our member in here to say, I've noted some of them do not want to work, some are lazy, whether it's all, I'm not yet sure, but some are lazy, some do not want to work. And we at the Department of Labor are so worried about it as we'd like to commission a typical scientific find out, a research into the attitudes of South African citizens towards accepting employment, mostly in agriculture, but in all other sectors where they don't. Because our principle of saying only when we do not have skills. Now, when we do have the skills, what makes such children? And that's what none of us so far has got the answer. Yes. Rather than all jumping on the bandwagon of the lazy, they're not lazy people like those. And when we interact with our stakeholders, we go out to our employers on a mission called stakeholder relations management. We go to the farmers, they group themselves into groups, and we go and explain. More than them, more than one province have had the presentation that I've made to discuss today, so that we all agree and have knowledge of how the whole permitting process happens. And that goes me to reiterate the response we had from my colleague about perhaps why does it take so long? There are those justifiable, I agree, and those not justifiable. When it goes to up to 2 months, from 2 months onwards, we also try to find out what's happening in that case, because that's not normal. But however, the justified length of time that we take in adjudicating any
came from the chair about our relationship with international conventions. With the ILO, in this process, I've got to say, although not yet ratified by government, we do have three ILO conventions on international legal migration that we align ourselves
with. We asked also specifically on the consultation processes.
That's what I thought. I touched on it when I said we call ourselves a F department, it is Home Affairs, starting the process, Labour for recommendation, DTI also for recommendation. And outside of government, we then go to our employers, preferably in constituencies, you know, groups in agriculture, per sector, so that we can cover as many as we can, trying to explain the permitting process.
The direct question is, here is agriculture here. Here is the industry here. Have you consulted with them on this regulation?
Chairperson, with the Wool Growers Association in particular, is that what it is? Our contact with them was when they lost an application to the department. We have not been Association in particular to explain our regulations and procedures. If I follow the question,
how does it work with regulations? You publish them, you get feedback, or you consult first in the process of you drafting the regulation? How does it work? Especially as it would relate or affect other departments, like agriculture in this particular instance. So that's the principle. I guess that's what we're trying to look into.
I follow the question relates to legislation process. The first one would be a search process. If the department wants to put up a piece of legislation, and thereafter all the other processes. The white paper and then going through NASDAQ. But when we come to stage of the act being signed by the state president, then the minister, if it's from the department, the department will then come up with the regulations. In this instance, for international legal migration, we're still guided by the Immigration Act, in which case it was the Department of Home Affairs that published the regulations. And I guess they went through all those things. So we take from the act and the descriptive regulations to come up with the process, which we then have considered steps.
Welcome, the chair of Home Affairs, Mama Maunye. Sorry about that. Anyway, can we have responses from Akasha? Quickly, the point.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there was a question that was asked by Honourable Mayor Mabulisi relating to the costs. Why should the industry be recommended to pay for overhead costs? Our view is that in terms of the study that will be conducted, there will be instances where a venue or some other place where a meeting would be held would need to be procured, and we thought that in line with the terms of preference that will still be drawn, that the industry should take the time in terms of that. However, in terms of operational costs, in each and every department or stakeholder and in the industry would take responsibility for their own costs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank
you, Chairman.
To the point.
Yes, I will. Let me firstly say that agriculture is a specific area, and I refer to Labour's remark about the Ficksburg situation, and I'll take that as an example. You know, the problem is, to be a farmer, you are weather conditions play a role, droughts play a role, heavy snow, rains play a role. So the farmer can decide that he wants to start shearing now, but on conditions, he decides that he will postpone the sharing date for 2 months or a month or whatever the case may be. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the biggest problem we've got. We've got no idea as to when the farmers in a season, and the season normally starts on the 1st of July every year and ends around about the 30th of June. June is the only month that people not really sharing, then the market's closed. But the first sale are the 20th of August, so the farmers start sharing round about now, this time, 1st of July, to be on the first auction on the 28th of August. So now it might happen, or it happens now, that you've got lambing seasons and people are, according to that plan, they're sharing. So it happens sometimes that we needed about 5,000 shearers on a specific date, specifically from August up until November. Then flattens down. And then here from March, April, May, we again have got a very much use of shearers needed. And it depends also market driven. By some years you'll see farmers will share only once in a year, other times they will share three times in 2 years, other times they will share every 6 months. So you see, that's really a problem for us to decide when we need that share. The question about training, I cannot really answer that and why there's so many people not continuing with the business. But yes, we've got a database, we can go back. But the problem is, they do one course for 2 weeks, then we've got a database, but then they must have practical experience going to it. If we're going to catch up, then after a year, we must start the process from the start again. So yes, we have got a database, but it's in practical uses of no use for that because it's so highly skillful job. Chairman, can I rule as such that my colleagues say full on where I not miss something? I can't read my own handwriting here. The potential for wool growing in South Africa is enormous. We are in the position to create a lot of jobs in South Africa in the wool industry. To give you some example, we only produce 2% of the world's production. But due to some facts, and I'm going to mention it for you, predators and stock theft, they are no-go areas in South Africa for sheep farming. But we've got a lot of potential. But for you, for this house, it will be very interesting. And I'm referring to Mr. Salam's question. We've got a training program, a training and development program running currently in the East Cape from 1997-98 up until now. And try and see what I'm trying to say to you. In 1998, only 220,000 kilos of wool goes through the formal market in South Africa, reaching a price of 675 cents at that stage. We continue now for 12 years in that area, and in 2011, we managed to get 2.8 million kilograms of wool going through the formal market, from 220,000 to 2.8 million. The value of this was in 98, it was 1.5 million. Now, this year, these people receive 69 million rand. Now, as honorable members, you must remember this is all foreign currencies. And coming from an area where the poorest of the poor live, it's a tremendous achievement that we've got. To bring the people in 10 years' time from 1.5 million income, foreign income from outside the country, to 69 million. And the potential in these areas to which I'm referring now, it's the former Transkei-Suska areas have got the potential to double this kilos from 3 million to 6 million without any fear of overproduction. And the rest of the country, we can double our production as from
45 million to 90 million without any doubt of overproduction, we can only alleviate poverty and create more jobs in South Africa. Chairman, about the Lesotho sharers, I think we mustn't overemphasize the issue of the Lesotho sharers. We've got a training program in South Africa, we only train South Africans. But due to the fact of the farming conditions, we have to rely on the Lesotho people of helping us out. And that's the reason we, as what I've explained to you, of the practices of farming, we don't know on the specific stage how many shearers we will need it because the farmers chop and change to long wool, to short wool, or to various kinds of shears. That's the problem. That's a practical problem. Our problem with the Department of Labor is you make it unworkable for us. And in practice, it comes, it boils down to the following, Mr. Chairman. I'm a farmer in the Smithfield area. I'm going to go to my labor office in Smithfield. I must tell them I need a permit for 4 shares or 10 shares, and I must specify the date. Then I have to pay 1,500 rand for that permit. See? Now I decided, no, I'm not going to share at that site. Now I'm asking the house the question, where did I get the shares? Who's going to provide these shares to me? Where must I go and find them? I asked for the permit to use them, but where must I find it? Where must I find these shares? Who's going to provide the shares to me? I leave it with you there. So we've got, we are really not against the system, Mr. Chairman. It's only, it's impractical. We cannot work in agriculture according to these rules. You have to accommodate us in some other way. Can I leave the questions for the other people, they are experts in the field, to answer, please, Mr. Chairman. And I think we can start here from the left, from Mr. Stiles, if you want to.
To the point, without any preamble.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to react because there was mention made about the cheap labor from the Lesotho, that's why the industry would like to employ them. I'd like just to reiterate that the members from the Lesotho who we would employ would earn the same income as the South African citizens, so it's nothing to do with short labor and cheap labor.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity. I'd like to comment on the consultation process. Mention that from the industry's perspective, we were not consulted, and we would welcome consultation. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just again on the issue of cheap labour, I think maybe there's a misperception here that we would prefer the Lesotho shares. It is expensive to go and fetch these people in the Lesotho. It is time consuming. The bureaucratic process has never been easy. That's why we've got the training programs going on in South Africa. Also, just on the issue of the bureaucratic process is that it's been changed without us knowing about it. We'd like to stay within the laws of South Africa. But when we apply for new permits, we didn't know that it's been changed.
Thank you, Chairman. My colleague from the Department of Labour talked about the meeting that we had with them regarding the permits, the corporate permits, and also the solution that they gave us about the farmers applying for the corporate permits on farm level and in the region where the activities would take place. In Immigration Act, specifically where the vacancy will be in a specific town. CMW and KBK Bikabir is service providers. They've got the vacancies and they render the services to the farmers. So for inspection purposes, the farm where they render the service will be inspected. But the farmer don't have a vacancy on the farm. That's why they don't apply for the permits. And that's the difficulty that we've got with this specific industry, is where the application is made where the vacancies are, and it's at the service providers. It's not on the individual farms. And that, therefore, it's also not in a region. It's in the whole country.
You make the last comment. Sorry for your time. There was a question about why, and I think it's Elizabeth that referred to this slide of why, what happened in 2011, and why it's not the same. It's of a growing market on the stage. We receive good wool prices, but I want to focus your attention that yes, we spend from industry funds over 2.5 million rand per year to train into South Africans. We not train any foreigner. They might be on occasionally in a team and then they will get some training because they are there. But we focus on the South Africans. And we really are focused on the South African people. That's only that we accommodate some people on scarce skills and time that we cannot provide them. So I think we must focus on that. And please don't run away with any other things, rather than to say, how can you assist us to get this clip in time off for the year coming? And that's our problem.
Okay, last round for questions. I saw Mr. Bamba, I saw Mama Botma, I saw Mr. Abram, Mr. Gela, and Mr. Pandala.
Yeah, once you see, there's an issue here, I think, of a seasonal approach in this. That I think it's also a contributing factor to the sustainability, but it is the responsibility of the industry to go and find new mechanisms for a sustainable project. Do you understand? Therefore, the industry should play a role in that part. But it is also a responsibility of the Department of Labor to find mechanisms to try and assist this industry in this problem. No. Can I be given a chance? I'm expressing my views now. Now, what I want to suggest is that the industry and the Department of Labor should they issue a regional consultation. I think I understand it better now. When we're asking it, I didn't understand. But some of the misunderstanding between the two might be resolved in a dialogue between the two institutions to try and find mechanisms. The options come to Parliament for us to entertain. I want to suggest that there must be an interaction between the industry because our internship, economy, the Department of Economic Development is to make sure that the environment is conducive for the industry to operate and also regulations in South Africa are complied with. But I'm not happy to the industry in relation to the greening program. We must know that this is the number of people we have now. This is a projection for the future. What do we have? If an industry is not attractive to the people who are trained, there's something wrong. There is something wrong about it. People are not going to go to training where they can't earn a living out of it. Meaning, you have to come out with the mechanism to find a sustainable way for people to have jobs. The whole industry is very big. It's not only this sharing part of it, and then it ends there. You can include a number of things around the whole industry for the industry to be sustainable. Therefore, the industry also is not doing enough in addressing the conditions in which our people are going to suffer. And the Department of Labor is its responsibility to make the environment
for the industry, conducive. Can't just say, we have this regulation, it ends there. You have to play a part to assist the industry to work. That was what I'm saying. I want the people to go there and interaction between the industry to find the mechanism to resolve the problem. Now, because most of the things, the gentleman, the honorable representative is saying, put it there correctly, the explanation, maybe to understand. But these things are issues that lead to operations and the day-to-day management of the policies of government. Therefore, you can work on this and find options that make the industry to work for us to interact with it as Parliament. Now, I don't really think we can do anything in this meeting about this now. It's still something the two institutions can work on. Come back to Parliament, submit proposals. Thank you.
You don't make comments like this. Mr. Botman? So the Mama Botman. So.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think earlier on we had made mention that the non-availability of certain information may make it difficult for us to conclude on this matter here. And I think from the former speaker, it still says we need to go back, get more detailed information, because as we ask questions, more information comes out. And we are unable then to finalize the matter here. And Chair, when you talk about the issue relating to consultation, I'm still not clear, Chair, because from the department, what I heard is that there was a meeting in terms of engaging on this particular issue. So I don't know what is meant by consultation. Is it all the act, which is the Immigration Act, in that situation it would be Home Affairs. And I can say we did. There were many stakeholders who came to our committee to air their views and also to submit. Some submitted through the internet, the email, and what, in terms of that particular legislation, the amendment of that legislation. So it cannot be said that there was no consultation around that. So I'm not sure, in terms of consultation, what are we talking? Are we talking about the new labor law or the Immigration Act? But if it's Immigration, as Home Affairs, we know that stakeholders were invited, they came, some they read from the internet about the revision, the renewal of that particular act. So they then made their submissions, and we deliberated on that. The other thing, Chair, is that, Chair, we are not saying it is because of cheap labor, no. What I said was, we do not know whether that might be another reason. That's why we are saying we need a more detailed information. We only have one side of the industry. We've heard the industry. We are saying it is important for us to also go and hear from the other side as to what is the problem. And we are able to reconcile the two and say, what is it that can be done to get to a better position, both for the industry and the South Africans. As we are here, Chair, we cannot at any point in time take decisions based on one side of the story. That would be suicidal from our side. Because once we conclude, more things would come from the other side, and what now? We shall have concluded on the matter. So those are the issues that I was saying, Chair. I think we need to just conclude and say, let us go back. Let us get, and I think the issue of the industry itself is an eye-opener to some of the issues, because we think there are many more organizations and industries that may come with this kind of an issue. And how do we then come with a solution that would not compromise us as the institution? Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Abram, follow by Mr. Gela and by Mr. Pandaran. I saw a hand from Mrs. Swan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to appeal
representative of the people, all the people of this country. And when Parliament is approached by any interest group, it is important to listen to that interest group, because lawmakers cannot anticipate creating laws when they create laws that it will cover the entire spectrum. That is why we have amendments to laws. Now, Jefferson, let us go back and ask ourselves. You've heard partially in the responses that sheep sharing is not an activity that takes place on a specific farm year round. It doesn't. It's a once-off activity, depending on whether you want to share long wool sheep, whether you want to grow shorter wool, 6 months or 12 months, that activity takes place. Now, if the farmer is expected to apply every time that specific farmer wants to do sharing, and that according to the response from labor, it is specific to the particular, shall we call, employer. What happens here is that the companies that market the wool for you, the farmer, his only avenue of marketing the wool is through auction sales that take place either in Durban or Port Lisbon. Now what happens is that his wool is shorn by the specific company that is geared up to do this. Let me tell you, that if you must take all those resource-poor farmers in the Eastern Cape and other parts of the country, the new farmers, where we've already been on other side, if you must take each one of them and say that you that got 10 sheep to share will have to apply on your own, Jefferson, we're making it impossible for those people. So what do? We take these companies that are going to market our wool, and they come along with their gang of people. They have the necessary equipment. You know, today if you go and buy a sharing machine, you're talking of a couple of grand. And then these small farmers cannot afford it. So they come along and share your wool, which is classed by the sheriff and special people who are trained to class them. And then you market your wool. So, Chairperson, let us ask ourselves, in what way do we make it possible for more resource-poor farmers to get into sheep farming and create additional employment whenever the opportunity arises? Those are the sort of issues that we ought to raise and that we ought to look at. Let us remember, Chairperson, that one size fits all does not work in this particular industry. And our
like some of the matters have covered me, but I was going to say the proposal by agriculture to get the stakeholders together, I think that is the best year. And just getting labor as well onto that, because definitely there is some sort of delay from labor. We've got to be fair about that. And also the fact that they want to deal on a farm-to-farm instead of dealing with the industry as a whole. Then also the industry, Chairperson, you should be able to project a much higher rate. At least a projection, because we're sitting with a higher rate of unemployment. You should be able to say, at least we need so many, 3,000 people. If the industry is well managed, you should be able to project. And why don't you then have an intake for the unemployed youth so that you train them? So in future, you don't have this problem. You plan for the future. You should be able to. That's the only thing that I'm worried about. Why don't you project that we need so many to train so many people? And know where those people are, so when you need them, you can get them. So I think your planning is not that good, or whatever. Thank you.
Mr. Funder.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just need to set the record straight that, that if what I said was interpreted that South Africans are lazy, I didn't mean that. What I said was, or what I was trying to say is that, you know, if the Labour Department says you can't use people from Lesotho because there are sheep shearers in South Africa, and then I tried to say, you know, who will make sure that those persons are not lazy, or not thieves, or are not murderers? You know, this is what I tried to say. So, a type of mechanism where you can, if you say, but surely if you say you must use these people, then you must make sure that they are good qualified people and they don't have any records of any sort.
You know what is going to happen, Mr. Thompson?
Huh?
You know what is going to happen when you make statements like those? Oh, no, you're
it's
not
a statement. I'm trying to make
Can I intercept that?
Well, if I had to be a sheep shearer tomorrow, I would be a lazy one. I tell you that because it seems like a hard work. That's all I'm trying to say. And then I wanted to say the department put us four issues in front of us.
No.
Huh?
Can I interject?
Yes.
You see, when you make statements like those, you know, crossing the boundary, you're talking about now thieves, you're talking about murderers, and all of those kinds of things. Now, you want to talk as if you are in a house made of glass. Because easily it could come back to you without you knowing. You know, especially if you talk here about murder. If you understand where I'm from. You understand what I'm talking about. Let's not make those, you know, terrorist, you know, statements. We find ourselves, we're trying to build one committee here that does not know you being part of this party. That has been the case for other members who don't belong to the Kasha Forest Fisheries Committee. We have a principle that says what binds us together is about food production and security. As a result, we never get to know who is who within the committee. In other words, who belongs to this or that party. But of course, we do have instances where some of us would really, you know, cross the line. We do call those to order so that we work and operate as one entity, as one committee. So I just thought I might wish to just outline that part in the interest of those that are not part of our committee.
Mr. Chair, can I withdraw it? Can I then replace it with somebody who says, who will make sure that those people are hardworking? I mean, would that be right?
And that regulation, among others, is published for comment. And that was my main question as to the consultation process I was referring to. So that if you are going to have an industry having not been party to that process, having not made comments I'm referring to, also having to avoid as much as we can working in private within departments, so that you bring on board agriculture, because these are, if you like, farm workers. And agriculture department is a big stakeholder in the equation. Now these are the kind of consultations I am referring to, so that we are able to move in one direction. If we had those consultations, I don't think we would have been at this point, where in one department would move in one direction, another department would move in another direction. I don't think we would be at that point. And the proposal brought, you know, to us here by the Department of Agriculture of a steering committee to really look into matters raised by Mama Fortman and other members that had also raised other, you know, areas of interest. The legislation concerned and the regulation should be made available to members, so that we are also able to make references to for our own what's called say. Just from an economic development point of view, perhaps also having to be able to look at broader opportunities here, so that you don't find that wool producer being able only to sell at BKB at Cape Moher, so that you don't find that garment when it is produced in Fiji being brought here on our own wool. I'm sure we have examples, many, that talk about, you know, diamond going to India, coming back here a lot more expensive, or being marketed in England. I'm sure, as I said, we have a number of those examples. Perhaps having to say to ourselves, what value chain must we build in these processes that talk here wool production? Not only having to be only end at primary production level, selling, but equally being able to say, what next can we do in our own country, on our own shores? Issues of cheap labor, I would imagine, you know, they do come into effect there. Maybe you have to take some of that garment or that wool to the Fiji Islands. I just thought, members, we should attempt to conclude our session in that fashion. And then we would be very keen to hear of any feedback on the pattern that we are about. As I said, we with the approach that talks, you know, a steering committee that pulls together all the relevant, you know, players, and the matter being looked at during that process. That's how generally I would wish to get us concluding on the matter that we are dealing with. Are we fine that with that approach, members?
Chairman, thank you. Can I?
No. You have your hand up for a minute.
Yes, sir. I thought you have blotted me earlier. So you summarized.
Yeah, sorry.
No, firstly, let me also apologize that when I introduce myself, I do as I normally do in the Portfolio Committee on Labor. I forgot that this is not the Portfolio Committee on Labor. I apologize for that. From today, I will know that if the Labor Committee has been invited to Agriculture
18 critical points. I don't blame anyone, but I think it's important to know the mandate of each Department of Labor. Because the mandate of the Department of Labor is to regulate the labor market. That is the mandate. Now, it regulates the labor market by putting in place labor legislation. And then the process of labor legislation. That has been important. So I thought it's important for me to raise that. I understand that there are seasonal work. It is not in the whole industry alone. You alluded to that point, sir. In the farming industry, seasonal work. So all labor legislations that exist, they apply to each and every industry, irrespective whether it is seasonal work or it's not. In the absence of industry collective agreement, there is basic conditions of employment and that applies to each and every industry that is not covered by a collective agreement. I thought it's important for me to raise that. But I think it's the first point that I raised when I said it in chair, that let's look at the recommendations of which was submitted by the Department of Agriculture. And I was thinking that in order to avoid us changing anything in this meeting, in order for us to allow that process, and then that steering committee will come and report to this forum again, you know, that these are the areas that we have identified, these are the issues that we think there might be change in the process. But I think the industry itself, sir, the industry itself, it must not come here and request it to be treated differently from other industries. If the sourcing of immigrant skills, there is a legislation that deals with that, that legislation deals with each and every industry. So if for them that now they have to have a central approach that as an industry they want to communicate with the head office of the Department of Labor. That's called for. That's why there are labor centers. Labor centers all over the country in order to give service to where the people are. So I think it's important for me to raise that. The last point is, I think the honorable member raised this point before me. I forgot to write his name, sir.
Mr. Gayla.
So that's he raised an important point of training. There's a Skills Development Act. There's a section that deals with learnership. Learnership is not somebody that you have employed, but learnership, you are entering into an agreement, a short-term agreement with this person who is unemployed to work to acquire skills. And you are not even going to pay that worker the wages that is agreed at the industry or even by the sectoral agreement, but there's going to be an individual agreement between the employer and that person. So I'm saying, going to that study committee, it must not necessarily be the question of what the industry wants, but it must be the question of what relevant legislation that exists in order to address the problem that they have. They want to employ South Africans. What is it that they must do in order to have South Africans who have the skills of that industry, relatives, two relatives that can do that? Thank you very much. I think your summary, and I'm done with this. Thank you very much.
I thought I might wish to say to you and the Committee on Labour, all workers except those working in the fishing industry are covered by the Labour Relations Act. They are only covered through the Merchant Shipping Act, which does not have anything to do with all what we
matter that we need to talk jointly as a Labour Committee. It's quite an urgent matter. I did talk to the chair in Chavillian on that matter. I think, members, we have come to the end of our session, which will then provide us with a direction. I guess what is more important is that we need to have some time frames on this one, so that when we come back, we almost deal with this matter swiftly, which will then give all the relevant stakeholders ample time to interact on the matter. We are going to go away effectively from the 25th of June until 20th of July, within which time would be expected to have that interaction within the stakeholders concerned, after which we'll be expected to gather this forum, take the process forward. Are we fine with that approach? Okay. Okay. You want to just comment? Okay.
Chairman, let me say from the industry side, thank you very much for listening to us in such urgency. We really appreciate that. We really not expecting any different kind of attention to our industry. Our industry are important for us, but not more than any other industry. I thank you very much in the way that you listen to us, pay attention to our problem. We really, really appreciate it. If I must then say that, let it be a wake-up call before us as industry, with all the comments that you've made. We've listened to you, we've tried to improve on our budgets and our projects. And let me stress the fact that yes, we share your view to focus on South African citizens for work, and that's what we really try to do over a period of time. I welcome the process.
So just before you go out, Mr. Bamba, if you don't mind. Quickly, just before you go out.
We really welcome the proposal of DAF for this urgent matter. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, I can assure you, and you are well aware of it, and I think you are still wearing some of the products that we made in South Africa, that Kai Gools and the CEO are present here, Mr. Louis de Beer. Kai Gools are looking constantly on processing in South Africa, as 98% of our wool is exported in a whole world base. It is also so that we cannot compete with the Chinese and the Indian people on this stage with the processing of wool. But we want to assure this House that we are looking to ways and means to add value to our own product. But Chairman, thank you very much for the way that you accommodate us as industry, and we'll try to comply with your requirements, if we can have a date for the next meeting, that will be much appreciated. Thank you very much.
So we assume that it is Labour that is going to convene, or Home Affairs, or DAF. It's a commitment.
Agriculture
will convene. Okay. And the last point I wanted to make for you, Mr. Bamba, we have a draft program just to bore you, especially those that are not part of our committee. We have a draft program that tells us of what potential could come out of our term next July until end of September. This has not been taken. articulated. Okay. The intention is for us to make comments on the draft program. I've just been talking to Dinao Edding with you, and then she was confronted with the difficulty of taking out others out and replacing and so on and so forth. I'm not going to get into the details. The last one relates to the draft program for the oversight visit next week in Northwest. It's a program that takes us on a fifth day, first day, effectively being just the arrival. And then it's effectively from the 17th until the 22nd of June. Also, I just thought, you know, without getting into the details, but the program shall be circulated for next week for members. And then the draft one for our committee work shall be emailed through to our, or circulated, it is being distributed and formed. I think we welcome that we make comments on that, and then those the channels would know on what areas we might wish to prioritize, and areas that we really feel that we cannot do away. Mr. Fanta?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I also just want to say, do we add in here that we get a report back from this whole process in about 6 months' time or 2 months' time that on the progress that has been made, so we don't lose it? Do we add it in here, or do we just get a written report to the committee on that?
We'll have to add it on our program. Members, I think that should take us to the end of our session, and thank you very much for meeting the session.
Consultant.
Okay. You want that card? That card.